You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome everybody to my couch as you always are this time. Now, new time, 11 a.m. And of course, that's Pacific Standard Time and wherever you are around the world. Welcome to my couch. I'm Dr. Michelle, and I have an extraordinary guest today. She's written an amazing book. Well, she's written lots of books to sort of help with our spiritual growth. But it's also a psychologically based book, and it's also down to earth. And it's something that we can all relate to in some way. And also in my social media, I was sort of putting out there that we were going to talk about how to cope with all of the turmoil and you know, reading the news every day and embracing the energy around the world and the chaos that's going on. How can we stay grounded and sort of keep sane in our own lives? It's not easy today, and we're going to find out. Well, let's bring her on right now. And there she is.
Hi.
So nice to have you, Dr. Maitreyi Mai Nolan. Thank you so much for coming on.
Wonderful to be here with you.
Oh, your book was amazing. It's called Into the Heart of the Infinite, a spiritual memoir of an extraordinary mystical journey. And I love the way you just roll it out. Your kind of your life journey. And it's,
yeah, it is.
Oh, it's beautiful. So what was really cool to me is as a psychologist, I'm so fascinated and wondered what it was like to have one foot in the state of ecstatic love and spiritual bliss, which you have and do and bring to others, and the other in the practical everyday world. And how can those be totally integrated? And I think a lot of people who I talk to, not only in my practice, but, you know, in the media and, you know, also in my interviews, I think that's very difficult sometimes to really maintain that because, you know, we can get lost in really answering our call and our inner higher self. We can get lost in that spiritual loving life, but want to come back down to earth and be that person for our, I guess, our families and our friends. And so we'll maybe talk about that.
Okay.
So anyway, I have some questions for you, and I think the best thing to do, let me just give a little bio first, because I think it's really important that people know who you are and what you've done. And you're an award-winning author, psychologist, and a spiritual teacher. And you've developed a worldwide following, bringing forth the deep wisdom that manifests to you and through you, which I also am fascinated with, through your inner guide, Baba, and also in your guru, the renowned Indian mystic Sri Sri Anandamurti Baba, right? Did I say that right?
You got it.
Oh, good. So I this is really what's interesting to me is the Baba has loved and guided you throughout your life. You've had these spiritual messages, and I really want to talk about that when you were young. But also, this Baba now speaks to you and through you. So I want listeners and viewers to find out how that works and the wisdom that they can get from this information. So thank you so much again for being here. So.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Aww. And the book's lovely. So let's talk about the beginning of your spiritual journey as a child. You talk about sort of feeling divine presence and how did that presence feel to you as a child, and how did that roll on into your life as a young adult?
Well, when I was a child, I think I was about 12 or 13 when I started feeling this divine presence near me. And it was kind of connected. I had had a deep connection to nature, and I felt the presence in trees and animals, and I really felt connected in that way. And then this presence, especially like if I was struggling and in stress, then I began to feel there was this holy presence, really, that was there, like a very holy being. The only being I'd ever heard of at that time in my life like that was Jesus, right?
Right, sure.
Holy being, but I had this feeling that I'd been with this being in the past, even though I didn't know anything about reincarnation or anything like that. And it was just such a loving, compassionate presence. At that point in my life, there was no guidance, no. It was just there with me.
Right.
I would feel like if I would be really stressed out by, you know, home and school and all the stressed out by it, especially at 12 and 13, right?
The
middle school years, right?
Very difficult, right?
I would come and I would feel, you know, this presence just come and calm my mind as if there was this holy presence. And I felt really in love with this presence. I thought, this is the one that I'm connected to. This is the one that I've come here for. But I felt I was in the wrong time and place. Why wasn't this person a person? Why was I not? Why was I?
Right.
Just a subtle presence that I felt, you know. And
Sure.
So that's kind of how it started with this guiding, kind, extremely compassionate, loving presence that I felt. And I didn't know who it was. There was no name. There was no guidance. But I felt it.
Sure.
Had many
experiences
as a child with it.
Wow. And so it was just sort of a blissful feelings you were having and just sort of
it was
enveloped.
Very and healing and magnetic. I felt, like if you really get into the Mother Mary or Jesus or some divine figure, you feel they're so beautiful that you feel incredible love. And this being was clearly beautiful like that, that it drew out this devotion, this love.
Sure.
For this divine being. Mm. And a sense of wanting to be close to that divine being.
Sure.
And missing that in the world that I was growing up, which was very, you know, 1950s, very material.
Right. Sure.
Suburbia.
Sure. That's right.
Covered couches.
Right. Exactly. So then you sort of segued into being a teenager and you know, a young adult and getting into the life you talk about in your book. So the beatnik life. I think that's so cool.
I went through all the in my teen years in high school. I went through the beatnik phase with the black and the tight, ironing my hair.
There you go, girl.
Great, you know. I went through all of that and you know and enjoyed it actually.
Yeah.
Really. Coffee houses with my boyfriend, and going to the Hungry Eye in Chicago and playing, he played banjo and we'd sit there and, you know, be part of the musicians. And that was fun.
That is cool.
You know, and then went on to my hippie years, you know, so.
Sure.
It was fun.
Really neat. I can imagine. And, you know, I've heard some amazing things about that very opening new kind of age of the hippie movement is love. And what a wonderful age.
You know, beginning of the age of Aquarius.
That's right. Exactly. Is in the song as well. But then I understand you as well. You were sort of experimenting at the time, as many folks did, with LSD and sort of had some mystical experiences in those journeys, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was part of it. And it was there and I started taking LSD, and what happened to me when I took it is that I found that I went into, rather than that personalized, divine, holy presence that I felt as a child, I just went into the cosmic whole. You know, I would find that as the trip got stronger, I would find myself sinking deeper and deeper into a time slowing down. Like one trip would take lifetimes, you know.
Wow.
Very long. It was really only 12 hours in, you know, time is very subjective. And
it is.
In our normal time, it would be about 12 hours. But in my subjective time, it would be, you know, 100 years. and right. and it would be because time would slow.
Yes.
And as it slowed, the unitary wholeness of existence began to unfold more. Mm. And I, you know, I read Timothy Leary and, you know, I used his work as a guidepost, and I sort of did this thing of regular experiment with going deeper and deeper for a couple of years. And and going deeper into this state where time would slow down and I would feel this unitary wholeness, you know, it was very powerful, very powerful. And that opened me up again. I had become rather agnostic, I would say. I was very disappointed in churches and religion, and the whole thing didn't make it for me. And so with LSD, it opened up my experience that the divine, that there is a unitary wholeness of being, that a blissful ecstatic awe that is there with this incredible cosmic wholeness. And I really love that state. But that's when the split began to happen between, you know, there is me in my everyday life, which was kind of, I was a student at college. Right. It was okay, but it was kind of boring compared to this cosmic.
You know? I bet.
Right. I was very drawn to these cosmic experiences, and but I didn't have any way of bringing them into my life, of integrating them. There was cosmic experience in LSD, and then there was everyday life.
Right, right.
Then I reached a point where I had a LSD experience that was so profound, so deep, that I experienced this time slowing down, and this bliss state always got very, very strong with that time slowing down. Mm-hmm. But this time, then I reached a point where it's like there was a film, like a dimension, and I crossed it, and I followed this point of light, and I crossed another barrier, and then I felt that I got this resounding sort of a realization that it never existed in the first place. The whole universe was within my mind. And I saw the whole universe fold into each other, galaxies and every planets, suns all folding into each other, and then it was gone. And then there was just something between being and non-being outside of time.
Right, right.
And I somehow, then the next thing I knew, I was back in a bliss state, and and time was beginning to pick up again. But it felt like, why am I here? How did I get back here? I was outside this reality. How did I get back in it? And and then I resumed normal consciousness, and I knew that I could never take LSD again. That was a door closed. That it had where it was going to take me in terms of understanding, in terms of experience. But I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know anything. I didn't even know that other people outside of LSD had these experiences. I didn't know anything. Sure. And so I tried it again. It didn't go well. I had my first bad trip. I wasn't meant to do it, you know, and I knew it.
Right.
But I didn't know what else to do. And so then I went through a difficult period where I was having issues and struggles, basically because I was really depressed and disoriented, that I couldn't access that bliss any longer.
Right.
And I went to the psychiatrist, very traditional, and I said, what am I going to do? I have all this anxiety. And and this person just basically said, well, just live a normal life. The problem is you're not, you know, you've experienced with these things and you should just live a normal. Well, that was really depressing to me. And
oh, yes.
It was a very trying,
right.
Challenging time.
Right.
But then it led to meditation. And, you know, I took a course in Eastern philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And reading the Bhagavad Gita as part of my
study.
And I'm reading it and I'm going, oh, my God, all these people who... they didn't take LSD and they're having experience these things. Oh, that, and I began to, for the first time, you know, I didn't know anything.
Yeah, sure.
I began to realize, well, this is real.
Yes. Yes,
this,
it is.
This is something that other people have experienced.
Yes.
Throughout history.
Right. Exactly.
And these are real states of consciousness. They're,
yes.
They're not just LSD. They're not just a drug.
Right.
And with that realization came a lot of hope and a lot of
yes.
Thought that...
Well, it was tough getting through, though.
It was tough, you know. It's one of those critical points in life where you have to make a change.
Sure,
and so
sure.
I sure. That led to meditation. And yogic practices then became my path throughout my life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
also, I mean, I love the story. And really, you know, you got a taste for a while of opening that third eye. Is, you know, I don't know the language myself per se, but I mean, this is just how I interpret it.
Yeah, just going into the cosmic.
Yes, being one with universal cosmic consciousness. And
yes,
to me, we all have that within us anyway. It's just
we do
being able to tap in, right?
Yeah, it's accessing,
but it's accessing.
But it is the base of our being, of every one of us. This is a fundamental base, and it's just cultivating access. And I think that most people
have
special experiences in their life, and given our material culture, we often don't talk about it, but you know, maybe you're out and hiking in nature and suddenly you look up and you see this magnificent sunset or something and you just experience this moment
of
bliss and awe.
Yes.
And suddenly you're not just a single little person, you're just connected, right?
Gosh, that is so true. I remember when I was a little girl, I loved going out in the sun. I used to frequently, you know, just sort of put my face up to the sun and I'd feel this overwhelming flow of this. I couldn't explain it when I was a little girl. It was happening a lot.
Yes.
Of course, when we get older and we start having hormones and doing the things teenagers do and, you know, whatever, that seemed to be lost. And I think that is perhaps with brain changes or hormonal changes, right? And living in the world of...
Right. We get pulled out. We get pulled out into our experiences in life.
Right.
And
we do.
We move away. But those moments are where consciousness appears, right?
Yes.
And it can also happen with a loved one. You know, there are different circumstances that happens with people. But sometimes you look in the eyes of somebody you love and there's not two. There's one, you know.
Absolutely.
You're just lost in that love.
Absolutely.
You know, love can be
exactly.
And you can truly, your separateness dissolves in it.
Oh, it's true. And there's, no need to speak. It's just.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so we touch these moments. But what meditative practices do is they allow us to cultivate
that.
And sometimes psychedelics give us a look-see of that cosmic unitary whole, which is the base of our existence. And when we have these kinds of experiences, we're just touching in. We're touching our soul base.
I agree. Well, I think that's lovely. By the way, in case you just tuned in here virtually online, and also on our radio program simultaneously, latalkradio.com. My special guest today is Maitreyi Imai Nolan, and we're talking about her latest book. She has so many books. We're going to encourage you to go on her website in a little bit because you'll see all the books she has, and you can get a real flavor of her life and her teachings and her Baba, who guides her. The book's called Into the Heart of the Infinite, a spiritual memoir of an extraordinary mystical journey. And it really is so cool hearing about your journey and sort of living through you and experiencing what you did and wishing that we all could do that. Or, you know, I think there's a lot of people that say, oh, wow, she's been selected, or she has. I just think for me, I think, wow, this was your soul who came here to learn this. This was part of your soul who said, I'm open to this. And it just happened in your life. And can everyone open their hearts to this kind of knowledge and learning?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel that the connection to the infinite self, the God self, is there for everyone. It's there. And as I said, I think there are special moments in our life, peak moments when we have that connection. And it happens for most people, I think. There's moments are there. You know it's there. But then you can cultivate that. You can cultivate that in heart connection, in your thinking, and the way you reading inspirational things that bring you in connectedness. And in deep meditation, mostly, so that you open your heart and mind to connect with the whole. And
I love that
divine presence.
It's true. It's beautiful.
I don't think that I'm special in any way. I'm a really ordinary person, and I wrote my experiences because I think that sometimes reading other people's story helps you. Support you in your story, in your journey.
Sure.
Because we're all on a journey in life, a journey of self-discovery, a journey of self-connectedness. And it has its struggles, and it has its moments of joy, and it has this connection to open to the wider, greater whole.
Yes.
And to realize that we're not separate beings.
Ooh.
We're so all part of this integrated, interwoven whole of being.
So true. And I think this is why also we are so connected. And it's really difficult right now. Well, it's always been difficult, I guess. But if your heart is open, but now we have social media, we have access to knowing what's going on all around the world and the chaos and the quote holy wars and the destruction and the suffering. And I mean, it's so difficult for so many people to shut off that exposure. And I don't think a lot of people want to I'm not watching the news. Maybe they are, but it's so hard to not be affected by that every day and feel the vibe around everyone and the suffering, because you're right. We all are connected. So
you're right. And now, it's so difficult to see people who, you know, have lived lives like yours, who've their children and their families, and they go to work, and they're professionals, they're computer people, they're all different kinds of professionals like you are, you know, or if you're, you know, a laborer, they're just people like us.
Right.
And see their lives destroyed. We wouldn't, you know, during World War II or something, we didn't, we knew there was a war out there. We knew it was horrible. We didn't see
right
there in front of us. And now we do. And that's a new experience, because we can have that instantaneous connection to what's happening around the world. And it makes the horrors of war so much more real.
Sure does.
And I do listen to the news. I do keep up on it. I feel like I don't want to be an ostrich in the sand, you know.
Right.
And I wanna witness what is happening. And it's hard. It's hard, because it is very painful. Mm-hmm. And yet I do think that we're in a transformative process towards a more positive future. And that in that transformative process, there's the nature of transformation is that you're moving from one level of being to another level of being. And in that process, there's a deconstruction of what has been to reconstruct at a higher level. Mm-hmm. And war has been around for a long time. And some of the things that are happening, but the political games and the war and all that stuff has been around. But right now, it's in your living room. And that was never the case before.
Right.
And so we have this access to this knowledge and information, which I think is part, as painful as it is, it's part of the process of making this obsolete because we can see how horrible it is.
Yes.
We see that this isn't working.
Yes.
We can see that functional societies are being destroyed and made non-functional and, and in a way that we could never see because we didn't have the access that we do now with communication systems.
It's true.
And that
so is true.
Part of that transformative energetic process. We're disgusted by what we see. It's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of the process of change, to be able to recognize how horrible what we've been doing for a long, long time is not okay. And I'm hoping, you know, I the guidance I receive is that we are in this transformation process, level of being, to a different type of world, a world where war will not be, not exist, a world where we can live in harmony with each other and find, settle our differences in a different way.
Yes, exactly. It's beautiful. And I mean, it's a horrible lesson, but I mean, I guess the human consciousness needs to go through extreme suffering. And we have since, I mean, I've been watching these documentaries on Oppenheimer and, you know, all the, when we created the nuclear bomb and exploded it for the first time in Nagasaki and then Hiroshima, you know, it just horrific energy when we learned how to split the bomb, which is, I mean, I guess we, what I'm saying is did we have as human beings, as Homo sapiens sapien, did we have to go through these stages of experiencing horrific loss and hate and in order to come out the other side? Is this what you're saying, the guidance that you're getting from your real Baba?
Not that we had to go through them, but you know, it's our process of evolution. You know, these are human tendencies. This is the shadow of human consciousness. We feud with each other, you know, and we create walls and barriers and beliefs that this or that is. My way is the only way. God is on my side. You are the infidels or the, you know. We created that for a very, very long time.
Yes.
It's time to evolve past.
It is. It really is. I wanted to ask you also, and we didn't, we just touched on this briefly at the beginning, but this is sort of your journey, you know, in your amazing book. It's called Into the Heart of the Infinite, a spiritual memoir of an extraordinary mystical journey. And that's my special guest, Dr. Maitreyi Mainolan. And of course, you opened up your heart and the real Baba came into your life. How did that happen? And how did it, he come through you?
So what happened was I was in my early 20s and I had gone through those LSD experiences, which had opened my consciousness. And I'd gone to that class and I'd discovered that, oh, these states of consciousness are real. You know, people that have experiences throughout the world, these states of unitive consciousness. And then I realized that LSD was, and psychedelics are a look-see, not a way through. And, and I found meditation. Mm. And I started regular meditation, and I started having, at first I started having these unusual experiences. I got scared. So I stopped meditating. Mm-hmm. And then, but I really wanted to meditate. I really wanted to get back to these states of divine consciousness, of divine presence. And so I started meditating again, and I was having these very peaceful, quiet meditations. It was very nice. Mm. And then one day I came out of meditation, and I realized that I had been hearing this voice talk to me, not only in that meditation, but for months. And I would forget it.
Yes.
I came into conscious. Otherwise, I would have gotten scared and run away, you know. But
sure, of course.
When I finally realized that this had been going on, I was already so in love with this divine presence that I went, oh, well, you know, this is weird. I don't know. I think maybe I'm crazy. People don't hear internally, you know, unless they're crazy. Because I was young, I lived in Southern Ohio.
Sure.
I had no experience with anything. I was not a psychologist.
Yeah.
I didn't have any understanding of these things. And so I've found that the beauty of this being that was there, just like when I was a child, the beauty was so, holiness was so immense.
Yes.
It was just tremendously in love. Anyone would be in love if they saw such beauty and such holiness, such divine presence. Anyone would be in love, you know.
Ooh.
You can't help but love it.
Sure.
And he told me that his name was Baba, just Baba, which is a very common
term. Right.
I didn't know what that
meant.
It's a very common sort of address for any sort of spiritual.
Right.
But he just said Baba, and that was what he told me. And I felt just an incredible, I was so in love that all I wanted to do was be near to his presence. Mm. And so I went through a period where I kind of, you know, the outside world kind of matched the, sort of went along with the inside world. And I went through a period where I just became so in love, so immersed in this divine love that I really didn't want anything else. I didn't want to be involved in anything. And I went through a month or so where I just sort of disconnected, I would say, from worldly life. And and then this period happened where Baba brought me into my husband decided to go off for a few weeks to Jamaica. We had had this, all these miraculous things happen to make us on this farm, 1,000-acre farm in the middle of Southern
Nice.
And so I was alone in this place. And I went through a couple of weeks where I would say it was a spiritual purification process.
Wow.
Where Baba was with me and I was completely immersed. I was immersed to the point where I really couldn't care for my body. You know, I was just melted into this love.
Yeah.
And then Baba would sort of move away and I would feel, excuse me, I have a bit of a cough.
It's okay. Of course.
I would feel that I was separated and going crazy because what was I doing? You know,
sure.
Listening to voices and melting into it. Like
right.
And
yeah,
I would become afraid. And I would go through that for a while. And then Bob would come close again.
I see. Uh-huh, of course. And also, you know, when you're talking about, you know, voices and everything, and I know, I'm sure you thought, oh, I'm going crazy or whatever, right. But I mean, I've spoken with people who, you know, had actual audible, it's an audible voice that you're hearing. It's not just a thought or you're being imprinted, you know, by a presence or something that's bringing thoughts, you know, to mind.
Yeah, so sorry.
So that's okay. As I understand it, it was an actual voice, you know, saying loving words and kindly, you know, sort of being there with you, within you, right?
It was a loving voice. And there was a sense of presence.
Yes.
It wasn't an audible voice. It was an inner voice.
I love it.
And I felt that. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. And I'm so sorry. And you know, what I find is also sometimes what we have is, I call it our higher self, where we're drawing in information from whatever you want to call it, the universal consciousness, God, the quantum field, whoever, you know, however you want to say that in a scientific term as well. But we are drawing in and opening our hearts and selves up to higher energy beings sometimes. And if we do, you know, the practice of experimenting with meditation and stuff, we can open ourselves up, you know, if we stay on course of focus and meditation, we're allowing ourselves to receive information from those higher levels of consciousness, such as Baba, the guru. Right.
That's right. That's
sort
exactly
of the way
right.
it works.
Yes, and that's what happened. And I really felt that I had in this purification, there was this bliss and this struggle. And that was about 2 weeks. And I was so deeply immersed I couldn't even feed myself. Baba would say, "Now you need to eat, put this and I would be so gone into this. He would say, "Now put it, eat it," you know. So he guided me. He even took care of me physically during that when I was really gone in this immersion. And then at the end of it, my guide said, my Baba said, "You have wasted your life in self-pity."
Wow.
And you don't really deserve for me to stay with you.
Ah,
yeah.
No, don't go. No, no.
So I said, "Oh, please stay. Please stay." And, and I felt like him looking through me, and I felt like my past lives, like a deck of cards behind.
Yes, yes. And flashing, kind of.
Yeah, and I couldn't see them, but I know he could, and I felt him looking through all that I had been. And then I felt this energy rise up in me where my being melted into him. And just the thinnest veil was left of, it was like somebody turning up a radio dial.
Right.
And just the thinnest veil of my own
individual
separate self was left. Just this very thin, but I felt almost complete. Unity with this guide.
Yes.
I felt that, you know, it's a great, there's great bliss. There's great in this union of love.
Yes.
Of divine love, where all sense of individuality, this world was gone. My individual self was gone. There was just this love, this bliss. And then as that state began to settle, Baba said, "Now come to India and be with me in physical form." And guided me that I should go to India and be with my guru.
That's beautiful.
Form. So I had never met my physical guru. I only met the inner guru who and guided me and cleared some energy and And my husband came home from Jamaica and I said, I'm in India. So he was also a Anandamurti Baba devotee. And so we sold everything we had. We got rid of our farm. We gave our dog away and our two cats. And we bought one-way tickets to India.
Wow. How cool.
And to be with physical
groups. Yes.
So that's how Baba first came to me as an guide and guru.
That is a cool story.
Yeah.
And you, I mean, it's just semantics, I guess, but I would say he is for you your spiritual guide. I guess we all have spiritual guides, right?
Guide, guru, yes. The one who has. But I feel, you know, both my physical guru in India, Krishnamurti, and my inner guide, Baba, both are manifestations, I feel, of divine, that, that unitary, that one being, the one, the one God, right, the one self, embodying for me in a way that I could understand. So I have felt that all the guidance I receive is not, and that I received over the years there was so much guidance, so much love, so much helping me with my own struggles and just being there for me, never asking for me for like 25 years or something or longer before it changed. But there was so much love, and it was as if this, the divine presence, the divine infinite one, was just embodying in this congenial form as as a very kind, compassionate presence.
Yes,
that helped me to be.
Yes,
I would to go into deeper states of consciousness where, because I had such love for this presence, but the love that I had, I think anyone would have.
Yes.
This is a divine presence that there was a time when every word that was spoken was like the facets of a jewel, like perfect, perfect.
I love that.
Perfect justice, perfect. And it's like this world was black and white compared to color.
You know, that's incredible.
What we call human love, it's like dim compared to the love of divine. And it was
story.
Anyone would be completely in love. I felt I felt it was just my solid rock, my
yes
tip of the storm.
Right. When you said that Baba said to you something about you're steeped in self-pity, does that mean that you were really deep into your own ego, or what do you, how do you translate? I mean, we all as human beings sometimes, I guess, need self-pity. Sometimes we need to say, oh, you poor thing, life's tough or whatever.
I think it wasn't really, it was my sense of inadequacy, my sense of inferiority, that I wasn't as good as other people, maybe, you know. All those vulnerable kind of, especially teenage things that, I, as a kid, I had dyslexia and I wasn't one of the girls who made straight A's. And I sat in the row with the dumb boys who threw at paper airplanes. You
know?
No. You know, and, you know, that kind of thing, you know?
Right.
Oh, I'm not quite as good as they are. And I'm, you know, you know, the kind of insecurity.
A lot of people feel that way. I mean, a lot of adults and older adults.
A lot of kids feel that way. The kind of insecurities that young adults have, and that.
Exactly.
That's what I'm talking about.
I'm not enough. And I'm just. So his suggestion was love that which you are.
Yes. He was
been. Let it go. And love
waste your life feeling sorry for yourself. Put it together here.
That's so cute. I love that. That's beautiful. So also, you know, in this world, and I want to Also, before we have to wrap up in about 5 minutes, I want to share with viewers and listeners how they can find out more about you.
Yes.
But first off, just a real quickie, in your book, you were talking about losing the ego. And I know this is a long discussion for a short amount of time, but how can we best sort of kind of lower the ego needs that we have and embrace more love, and especially with all the chaos, like I said, going on in this world, embrace what's in front of us and just try to be a decent soul every day. I mean,
by letting go, by letting love be, by melting back into that love as much as we can. Seeing the divine everywhere. I think the real secret and what I really discovered was that the divine is the source of everything that is. It's in every living being.
Yes.
And this world can transform from dull to magnificent if you allow it to be. And so if you look on the bright side, a glass can be half empty or half full. And if you let your glass be half full rather than half empty, and if you see the beauty that's around you in every plant, every animal, every human being, and every good intention that others have, it makes life much more bearable. And you begin to see that there's love all around. And that divine love permeates this world and all the expressions of life on this planet. Mm-hmm. And that, the more you can stay with that and live in that, whatever terrible things are going on in the world.
Yes, yes.
You're living in the light.
Mm-hmm.
You're living in grace.
Yes. And if we can stay in grace and I guess, like you said, give up or allow, or, you know, you have to just let go.
And control, and trust that the universe has its own way of righting wrongs and making things work out, and just trust that.
Beautiful.
So focusing on trust, feeling grace, opening to love, and feeling that beauty that is all around us and everything. Walking nature regularly. Feel the beauty of all the living beings around you.
I love that. And the nature and bugs and everything else, the animals and the creatures. I guess it's just allowing. And we have the yin yang. I mean, we have the supposed dark side and what the human being has to go through in terms of their belief systems and their hate and their fight and their defense and whatever they need to. And it's just perhaps being an observer, loving and allowing.
Loving, allowing, and seeing, looking on the bright side.
Yes.
Seeing that even when it looks very dark, that's temporary. This too shall pass.
Yes. Yes.
And that there is a purpose and a love.
Beautiful.
And something special that even in the deepest dark places is there.
Sure. There is light to be found.
Even when life gets really rough.
Oh. Well, listen, Dr. Maitre Imaim Nolan, thank you so much for being here on the couch. It went so fast. I really appreciate our chat and your wisdom and what you bring to the world. By the way, it's my pleasure.
I wanted to mention that my website has recently changed.
Oh.
It's yogama.org now.
Oh, okay. And how do we spell that? What would be the best way?
yogama.org.
Beautiful.
Yogama.org. Right. And people can see my books there, and they can reach me if they want to talk to me or study with me. They can reach me there.
I love it. And by the way, her latest book is Into the Heart of the Infinite, a spiritual memoir of an extraordinary mystical journey, an incredible life story of a woman who heeded the voice of divine love. What a gift. but she opened her heart up to it and went on a wonderful journey to be here to teach us all. Dr. Maitreyi Mainolan, thank you so much for being here and blessings to you.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to be here with you, Michelle.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining me. I hope you got some good information from my interview today. And if you have questions, of course, the rerun will be up on my website here on LA Talk Radio. You can listen to the rerun and check it out and also find out how to get the doctor's great books. Have a great day. And as I always say, take care of yourself first. Go within and love that which you are. And you'll always be great for others that way. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.